Yeah, so we're talking about really the topic of the decade, transgenderism. I mean, who would have known that 10 years ago that this would be something that would really change the trajectory of society? And so we kind of opened up with Bruce Jenner, now known as Caitlyn Jenner, who was the world's greatest athlete as a woman, but no one knew it yet. So, I just want to kind of review some of the terms, because to understand transgenderism, there's a few concepts you have to get down. Number one is they make a difference between sex and gender. Sex is the designation of an individual's anatomy, you know, at their birth, right? So if somebody has male parts, they're deemed a male. That is their biological sex. Gender refers to maybe the stereotypical roles and activities and attributes that a given society gives to males and females. And so when somebody's sex is out of alignment with their gender, they have something called gender dysphoria, as shown by some of these things in children and in teens. And so what they try to do is change their sex to fit their gender. And that is the process of transitioning, which goes beyond cross-dressing to maybe hormone therapy and sex replacement, or I guess sexual transition. Sex reassignment surgery, right? And other medical procedures. Okay, so any questions about that? Yeah, for the older generation, this makes no sense. I mean, there's definite layers upon layers to even get to this point. And I think part of the reason why this has taken hold is you have a lot of this is taught in college campuses and everything. And so you have these people who are now experts on this who are educating the rest of society. And we're kind of like, well, I guess that's just the way it's got to be. And so there is kind of a real aggressive push to mainstream this, and it's I mean, I've done some research on statistics and numbers, and it's pretty incredible. So why talk about transgenderism? Yeah, as of 2016, transgendered individuals comprise approximately 0.2 to 0.3% of the population. Recent estimates state that 700,000 individuals in the U.S. identify as transgender, though some speculate there is more. In fact, the percentage of Americans who self-identify as LGBT has risen from 3.9% in 2016 to 5.6% in 2020. I mean, just ponder that. In 4 years, it has gone up by 70%. And so, any speculations as to why that might be the case?
Now people know that
is an option. Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think it's kind of a way to stick out.
Yeah.
You're a victim if you are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you have extra sympathy and people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know. Pay more attention to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. There's a couple concepts. One is social contagion, that it becomes almost trendy. Another thing that's kind of true is, you know, we live in a society where if you are a victim or if you are oppressed, that gives you social capital. And so you have a lot of, like, those former Disney stars. They'll identify as bisexual or something like that, where they occasionally have some attraction to the same sex. And there's a way of kind of making them relatable and kind of helping their brand. So that's kind of social contagion, and the whole being oppressed is a way of just giving you social clout. And so when you kind of build into this, now during this that same span, self-identified transgender individuals have climbed to 0.6% of all adults, with 1.8% of Generation Z, born 1997 to 2002, and 1.2% of millennials, born 1981 to 1966, claiming a transgender identity. And so there has been a significant rise in people who have been experimenting with that. So in spite of their small size, advocates for this minority make big demands from society at large. On May 13, 2016, the Department of Justice and Education issued a guidance to schools about their interpretation of Title IX. For a school to continue to take federal funding, they must treat all students with the same gender, including transgender, indiscriminately. Therefore, when it comes to restrooms and locker rooms, the guidance reads, "A school may provide separate facilities on the basis of sex, but must allow transgender students access to such facilities consistent with their gender identity. A school may not require transgender students to use facilities inconsistent with their gender identity or to use individual facilities when other students are not required to do so. A school may, however, make individual user options available to all students who voluntarily seek additional privacy." Now, according to the guidance of the schools of interpretation of Title IX, who decides their gender?
The student.
The student does, right? So all you have to say is, "I'm transgender." Right? I identify as a female, so therefore I'm going to use the female locker room. Now, what is the potential societal impact of transgenderism?
What do you mean, societal impact?
Well, how will it impact our culture? If this really takes hold. And remember, we kind of had the the idea of, you have gender over sex, just like you have like the soul over the body, right? So your sex does not necessarily determine your gender, right? There's kind of a, what we call a bifurcation between the two. They can separate who you are biologically from who you are spiritually. And we'll talk about whether or not the Bible teaches that or not later on. But what they're doing is they're basically kind of forming a kind of a hard line here. And I mean, what does this even do to the category of gender and sex? I mean, what's their goal?
It's to blur the line.
To blur the line. Well, yeah. That, you know, traditionally we teach that it's sex. It goes this way, right? That your sex determines your gender. What they're saying is it goes the other way. That your gender really determines your sex. Mind over matter, so to speak. And so you look at some other, you know, we kind of go look at the LGBT, and we'll throw in Q, you know, because that's what they kind of do now.
All right, add a letter every year.
Add a letter every year.
Plus. Yeah, it's like
et cetera. Right, so the definition of a lesbian would be a woman who's exclusively attracted to a woman. A man exclusively attracted to a man who's attracted to a woman and a man, or vice versa, and then you have transgender. Well, if this begins to dominate, is there such a thing as a B, a G, or an L? If you are, let's say there's a gay marriage, right, and then one becomes transgender, is that person gay anymore? If they're still married and attracted, they would have to be bisexual at that point, right?
One interesting thing to observe is in conversation, many people, it seems, are accepting of this, and one of their the fallacies that they've yet to, because of the still relatively smaller numbers, is that it doesn't seem to affect them. How does it affect me? How does it harm me in this
idea that, it will continue to require you to change the way you speak and act and interact in every scenario, and it's kind of like you said, the mind over matter, where it's a rejection of outward reality in exchange for inward reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have yet to experience how that will actually impact their day-to-day. Well, in this idea that you have to accept as reality what is inside of my mind versus what's objectively visible or verifiable. And so this as it grows to require more and more of people, I think you'll see over time people see that kind of the madness. But I'm curious how long and how far those
go ahead, Seth.
You're asking how it affects culturally, and something, I just kind of was thinking about how, and it came to me finally. It's actually happened to me already.
Okay.
I was at a drive-thru, and being where I'm from, when you hear someone as a female voice, you say ma'am or sir, just out of habit, because you're ingrained.
Nice man, yeah.
That's polite. That's the polite way to speak to people. So I've done that and pulled up, and I got glared at, and then I saw this little thing on their name tag where it said their pronouns, and it was the opposite of what I had given them.
Where was this?
Brahms.
The one on industrial?
No.
No, the other one.
The other one.
So they had pronouns on the...
On their name tag?
Yeah. And I was like, whoops. That's why they're giving me this stare down. So, yeah, there's going to be confusion from people. Like, normal things where you're taught it's polite to say things a certain way are no longer polite.
Yeah.
Which is kind of frustrating. I'm not trying to offend you. I'm actually trying to be respectful to you.
Right. And there's, I think that's, I've had some conversations with teachers about that, about how, not only will you or should you use a different pronoun and why, and about, is it really kind and loving to tell someone that's not something that's not true, to lie to them, basically, and to require people to say what they do not believe to be true, right? And so there's definitely that, this kind of a, you have to, there's a pressure to agree with this regardless of whether or not you are violating your conscience or not. And so I think that's a good place to start with people, is explain to them, and it will be something where Christians will stand out more and more, those that, and I know that there's also, I hear or read posts of people who I know who are claim to be believers that, adhere to all the pronoun usage.
Yeah. I mean, you look at that title, the redefinition of Title IX. So, right, we have we'll do the girls' locker room here, and the boys' locker room here. And then maybe you might have like a single unit bathroom. Okay? So, both. Before, it was like, if you're a transgender, which bathroom do you use? Before Title IX. You use this one. Now, I want to say, okay, if you want to do that, just use this one. Right? But what do they want?
They want acceptance.
They want acceptance, so they want to be able to use this one or this one. And if you've got a problem with this, you use this one. So there's kind of a grand reversal that's going on. And so the severing of the gender and sex basically says, really puts an end to the separation between the two. So bathroom usage is one of the issues. And so all the girls who Because, you know, some, and there's going to be guys who will do this. Hey, guess what? I identify as a girl today. I'm going to use the girls' locker room. Right? Because there's perverts everywhere. Right? And they may not even be the transgender people, but there's nothing in the language that would prevent guys from doing that. And it has happened. So a lot of girls apparently are getting bladder infections because, and dehydrate because they're not peeing while they're at school. Right? And so you have a lot of girls in line here, but it's all in accommodation so that people who are...
Well, it's not even that. I mean, you could have, I mean, you have staff members. You could have a transgender teacher coach that, oh, I'm going to be the teacher for the girls.
Yeah.
Or, you
know, yeah. Yeah, and so there's a reason for this, where this is all part of trying to get people to accept this reality. And so you look at girls' sports, right? I mean, why do we have girls' sports?
Because physically they are different from boys.
Yeah. Yeah. So Allison Felix apparently ran the fastest 100-meter dash last year. And do you know how many high school boys beat that time?
400.
Yeah. Some around 300, might be 400. Yeah, high school boys. And so if she were to compete in the Olympics, but they didn't have a women or men's 100 meter dash, just one, I mean, no woman would ever win.
No woman would qualify.
No woman, wouldn't even qualify, right? Yeah, and so there's a real danger there. Now, sometimes it makes some accommodations, like you have to have hormone therapy for a year. But if you grow up a male, you already have some decided advantages. You have a bigger heart and more bone density. And so even if you're on estrogen for a year or 2 years and the hormone levels are the same, because you grew up biologically male, you do have a significant advantage, even if they make those accommodations. Right, so those are just a couple of the intrusions that are happening. Now why, and I think they're making a point, right? Because ultimately, what do they want?
Who's they?
Transgender activist.
Okay.
Acceptance.
Yeah, they want acceptance, right? And they know that to feel normal, you have to get society to buy into it. Yeah.
And speaking of like societal impact, as an educator, like as a teacher, I've noticed that impact in my education at the university, for one,
because
they talk to us about it frequently.
Yeah.
As well as in schools, like. I mean, besides, like, bathrooms and sports and all that stuff, like, I'm an elementary school teacher, and right now there's a push in elementary education for, you know, making your classroom an open space for students to, you know, figure out their identities and to be accepting of whatever students say they are.
Mm-hmm.
And even I know some teachers who, like, encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, reading books about it and talking about it and educating the children, our children, on these topics. And yeah, it's very interesting to see that, especially like, I mean, I'm in a second grade classroom and like, they're talking like other teachers, like, luckily not my teacher, but I know other teachers who are like reading books about that and talking about that. And,
you know, and I think it's really, it's a really interesting situation, because you look how impressionable kids are, and just the power of suggestion. And would you let your kid get married at 7 years old? Would you let your kid have a girlfriend in that kind of relationship at eight? Right? I think we all know what the answer is, right? So they're not mature enough to make those kinds of decisions. how could they be mature enough to make a decision that I'm really transgender? And, I mean, one thing at our church, you know, we had all those baptisms last week, but all of them, there was a waiting period to make sure that this is what they wanted to do, right? But what they say is it's important to do early intervention, because once you hit puberty, it's very difficult to successfully pull off a transgender surgery. I mean, your vocal cords drop or they don't drop. You know, it's it's a very difficult thing. So they do push for early intervention if you see signs of gender dysphoria. And I'll say this, I think this is institutional child abuse. It's institutional child abuse. I think 20 years from now, you're gonna have a bunch of victims kind of rise up and just say, I was deceived into this, and it's ruined my life, mm-hmm. and I'm physically disfigured forever.
Medically speaking, it's not good for you. Like, for instance, you know, there's a lot of difference between men and women. There's a lot of different cancers that men and women that are different from men and women.
Yeah.
And so if you identify, is it wrong for a doctor to write down that you're a male and, you know, in legally, if it becomes that way?
Yeah. Yeah, there's sterilization. I mean, if you take hormone treatments, it will, for the most part, sterilize you. I mean, you're really messing with the human body at a very vulnerable age. And so, yeah, there is a real sense of wrong that is being done. So, I don't know, you guys kind of knew that I was going to go there, but another big win for the transgender community actually happened pretty recently. So in addition, on June 15, 2020, the Supreme Court made a significant ruling on Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The text of Title VII prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The Supreme Court expanded sex to include sexual orientation and transgender identity. In the words of Justice Neil Gorsuch, an employer who fired an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires a person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex. Sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII forbids. Those who adopted the Civil Rights Act might not have anticipated their work would lead to this particular result, but the limits of the drafter's imagination supply no reason to ignore the law's demands. Only the written word of the law, and all persons are entitled to its benefit. So how does this ruling accord with Title VII's author's understanding of sex? Courtney, do you need a handout?
I do.
Let me get it. So what do they do here to justify this decision?
Equated sex with gender deciding sex.
Yeah. Right, so basically it took a modern understanding and read it back into it.
It's yeah, and they often, I mean, this is the luxury of the living is that they often have to take the liberty of interpreting those who can't speak up anymore.
Yeah.
This is what they meant. This is the spirit.
Well, they didn't even say they meant that. They just said they wrote it down, and then language takes its own.
Right, but I guess I'm saying, like, you see this a lot in scientific development, that if this person were here, if they knew what we know,
they would have agreed
100%. Yeah. You know, never mind that no one supported it at the time, but those were all ignorant people of the past.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a common.
Yeah.
We're more enlightened today.
Yeah. I used to Jesus. That's what. Yeah. Reading your meaning back into the text. Now, how will this ruling advance the transgender cause? I mean, what did it just say about sex?
by law they've become recognized and accepted.
Yeah. Right, is they have legal protections now. The Civil Rights Act now applies to them.
Becomes the law of the land.
Yep. Yep. So I can't fire somebody for being transgender or going through transgender surgery. I have to keep them employed. And that creates an extra burden if I do want to fire them. Because they can claim discrimination and they can get sued for that.
Yeah, and I heard that, you know, the guy that refused to bake a cake for a gay marriage, and, well, I guess the transgender went down there and they wanted to get married or something, he refused, and so there...
Yeah, it was like a transition cake.
You heard that too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess, is it still okay for religious reasons to refuse to recognize that kind of thing, or...
We'll find out. We'll find out.
So that'd be discriminating against my religion if you forced me to accept.
If you can prove that it's a religious conviction. So I think that's one of the things that makes this a little bit more difficult, is we all know the passages we can go to about homosexuality, right? But transgenderism would not be possible apart from modern technological intervention, right? Like, homosexuality could not lead to a family apart from modern technological intervention, right? Like artificial donor insemination or stuff like that. So that's why this is a thoroughly modern issue that's been aided by modern technology. And so you do have, I think, have some naive Christians who can buy into it and just say, show me in scripture where this is forbidden. Right? And then you kind of have the clincher. So this is like, so these are all the things that they're advocating for. And so what's really driving this? You know, how are they able to kind of marshal compassion and advocacy? Well, they're able to cultivate public sympathy. And I'll just give you one of the famous ones. Leela Alcorn was born Joshua Ryan Alcorn. Raised in a conservative Christian household in Ohio, he came out as transgender to his parents at the age of 14. Naturally, Alcorn's parents refused to accept his gender identity, and 2 years later, they denied his request to undergo transition treatment. Rather, they sent him to a counselor who would seek to convince him to accept the gender he was assigned at birth. In despair, Alcorn committed suicide by walking into oncoming traffic on Interstate 71. In his suicide note, Alcorn writes, "I have decided I have had enough. I'm never going to transition successfully. Even when I move out, I'm never going to be happy with the way I look or sound. I'm never going to have enough friends to satisfy me. I'm never going to have enough love to satisfy me. I'm never going to find a man who loves me. I'm never going to be happy. Either I'll live the rest of my life as a lonely man who wishes he were a woman, or live a life as a lonelier woman who hates herself. There is no winning. There's no way out. I'm sad enough already. I don't need my life to get any worse. People say it gets better, but that isn't true in my case. It gets worse. Each day, I get worse. That's the gist of it. That's why I feel like killing myself. Sorry if that's not a good enough reason for you, it's good enough for me." The transgender community saw Alcorn's death as a rallying cry, sought to pass Leela's Law, which would ban conversion therapy in the United States. So in their mind, what would have prevented Alcorn's suicide?
His parents' acceptance and willingness to let him have the transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Society's acceptance, he wants that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's interesting that I think it's interesting that you know, he never, I don't, when I read this, I never hear that. I hear him pointing to his, you know, he's never going to have enough friends to satisfy him. I'm never going to have enough love to satisfy me.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, he doesn't even hint that saying, you know, if everyone did this, if everyone did this. he's looking at himself saying there's this emptiness that can't be fulfilled, this void. And so, you know, a person could read that same note and say, this is exactly why transgender is so destructive, that it produces this this feeling inside.
Yeah.
And so I think we often talk about how the suicide rate is so much higher.
Yeah.
And and one would say, well, if we would if we would give them their approval, it would be better. Others would say, no, it's the transgenderism itself. Mm-hmm. And that would just increase the number of people who are having suicide.
Yeah.
So I think we have to, sometimes when we have the argument, don't necessarily interpret, because I think a lot of times that's, you know, people will, the activists will take up what wasn't necessarily even said by a person as their, like, poster child.
Yeah.
And misrepresent actually how that person felt or...
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like to me that in his suicide note, it wouldn't have mattered what he was going to... He was going to be unhappy and commit suicide anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so accepting his plight wouldn't have done him any good because he would have been a lonelier woman.
It sounds like he had mental issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mean to be unkind to this guy, but or girl, whatever, but it sounds like he had some serious mental issues.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a... It's not his biggest issue, wanting to be a woman. It sounds like he had bigger ones.
Yeah.
This sounded like to me and G here, in their minds, what would have prevented it. Well, they're just, the only way they could have justified it is to take things out of context out of his suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise he's going to kill himself anyway,
yeah.
Whether he was a man or a woman.
Yeah, I think one thing that really kind of comes out is his loneliness. Right?
Yeah.
And so that's why you get into, like, somebody who's transgender, right? And he undergoes the surgery. So he is now a trans woman, just using the nomenclature they use. Would a gay man be attracted to a trans woman? He wouldn't be. Would a heterosexual man be attracted to a trans woman? It wouldn't be. And that's why transgender, trans women and trans men often will connect, but that's one of their one of the things that they would like to see is like for full acceptance to take place. Straight men would regard a trans woman as a true woman and be willing to accept that and date them just like anybody else. Yeah. And
that's psychology. I don't think it'll ever work.
You know what I'm saying? I think it's also it kind of exposes, like, in an activist mind, this, apart from the church and an understanding of, you know, what defiles us comes from inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from our hearts.
Yeah.
This idea is that, you know, everything that is every obstacle, every opponent, everything that's your enemy in life is an external, right? And that there's nothing kind of internally to a person that's hindering them. It's everything external. And so for this person, we have to only deal with and address with what's external many times. And then there's apart from Christ and apart from that conviction, you know, people don't want to say that the problem is inside of us.
Yeah.
It's in us. It's in our heart. And if they're not willing to go there, then it has to be something else.
Yeah.
It has to be outside. It has to be the society, or it has to be my parents, or the church, or the country. And so it's one more example, I think, of this idea that if once you take the heart of the person out, they're looking for something to be out that would cause this loneliness and this despair.
Even biologically speaking, suicide rates for transgenders would be up because introducing hormones that aren't supposed to be there will cause, most of the time, you know, like even for instance, mothers who had just given birth, the lack of certain hormones are going to cause them to have postpartum depression, so adding those hormones will cause suicidal thoughts and actions, or could cause suicidal thoughts and actions. It's like, have they really thought this through? You know.
Well, I mean, if you inject a woman with testosterone, they will feel good. Feel stronger, more energy, all that stuff. And you might take that and say, well, this is a sign that this hormone therapy is really working for me. But yeah, you're playing with the body. I mean, that's one of the issues, is what's easier to change, your gender or your sex? And they would say that your sex is easier to change than your gender, and try to forbid. So it's okay to have surgeries and intervention with kids to change the sex. It is not okay to have any therapy that works on changing the gender, right? So there's like a one-way street here.
It's kind of ironic too, though, because there's this, it's like this recurring, we had the conversation with, when it was just LG, when it was just lesbian and gay, that there's this unchangeable thing about me, about my sexuality, can't be changed. And so it's kind of perverting the idea of the truth that your sex, you know, that's the way God made you. And so then it was applied to, okay, I can't change that. And so, but then it's, well, I can change it once, basically. You know, like I had a girl, high school student, that I had her, and she was, by all appearances, a girl. And then she kind of went through, cut her hair, started asking to call her by a boy name, and talked about she has a girlfriend now. And so we had a fairly, you know, good relationship and talked. And I asked her, so, you know, do you think this will be something that you will continue your life, or do you ever consider maybe going back? And she was very shocked, like, no, this is. And I was like, well, you changed once, you know, do you consider that you might change? No, this is who I am. So it's kind of a strange thing to understand, like, there's this belief that there's something about you that's unchangeable. You can change it, but then you can't change it back. Like, it's kind of both at the same time. I want to have it both ways. It's just really confusing.
I'll say, this will sneak up on you in ways you won't think about. I know someone that's transitioning right now, actually, from when I was in college. And I would have never in a million years said, yeah, he'll transition someday. He was this 6'5", lanky country boy. Always wore pearl snaps and Wranglers and a trucker's hat. All the way through college that I knew him. His nickname was Red. He was one of my friends back then. And back before Christmas, my buddy Kelly, the guy who's my best man at my wedding, I sent him a message to say, dude, I took a screenshot of this girl on Facebook and sent it to him and said, she looks just like someone we know. Who is it? And he says, that's Red. And I'm like, man, you got it. She looks just like him, you know. And I'm going on, and he's like, no, Seth, that's Red. And I'm like, huh? And we talk about this, and I couldn't believe it. It just shocked me, you know. So it's gonna shock us in ways we're not expecting.
Yeah,
it's gonna happen to people we don't think it's gonna happen.
Yeah, and I think one of the big issues that's coming up is just the issue of identity. Like, who am I? And people are kind of exploring that idea, and I think there's this belief that you can have a new identity, change who you are, and this will help you to feel better about yourself, right? You always hear the stories, I always felt different, I didn't feel like things were right. You know what I'm saying? Like, just a lot of confusion. And
that describes Red to a T.
Yeah.
A lot of times. I mean, he had a drinking problem at one time. He had a lot of other problems. And he was a great guy. He was a funny guy to be around and everything. But he always had that melancholy, like he would get kind of in this depressed mood for some reason.
So. Yeah. So I don't know if this is a chicken or the egg thing, if more depressed people kind of are drawn towards this as a possibility. But to give you more statistics, right? Sadly, Alcorn's not alone. It's estimated that 40% of transgender people have tried to commit suicide. 40%. Research studies have shown that transgenders with strong support are 82% less likely to attempt suicide, although incidence of suicidal thoughts are still high. And so that's one of the statistics they look to, right? If Lila Alcorn had more support, it would actually reduce the chances of Lila committing suicide, right? So what does that say about even the act of suicide? When somebody commits suicide, are they the culprit or the victim?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. Actually, the culprit.
It would be the culprit, right? So, some kid gets picked on, he gets bullied. I mean, he gets humiliated. And so he murders the bully. Is he the culprit or the victim? Right? He would be the culprit. But I think our society, I mean, when you look at suicide, people who commit suicide as victims, I mean, obviously you should feel compassion for anybody who enters that state. But suicide is murder. It is self-murder, right? It's taking a life that you're not authorized to take, including your own. And so suicide has become kind of the fuel to say, you know, if we change these laws, we will save lives. Right? And when you do that, you say that people who commit suicide are really victims of passive victims of active forces outside of them. So if you change these laws and change the culture, then you'll have less suicide. Does that make sense? And so what happens is, you know, I think one of the reasons why becoming transgender is popular is a way of getting people to rally to your side, to rally to your cause, to advocate for you, to support you. I mean, if you're like this marginalized kid who's just kind of on the outside looking in, you know what I'm saying? And you just want attention. Being transgender would be a way of getting lots of attention and getting like the smart kids who are socially conscious to all of a sudden rally behind you and advocate for you. Do you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of social power that you can get with it. There's a lot of support. I mean, there's even the different feeling that you have from taking the hormones that can help you feel better. And so there really is a strong allure to going transgender, which is why the numbers are going up. But, so part of it is like suicide. And you know, I think sometimes people who are compassionate towards people who commit suicide and that want to call them victims, I think there's some short-term comfort with that. Like, I don't know what drove them to this state. But I think there should be a degree of anger towards that, too, because suicide is wrong. And so I think as we kind of lost that in our society, right? We have a society that advocates euthanasia and stuff like that. We see people as victims. That can kind of fuel a lot of sympathy and compassion. That can lead to changing policies and doing things that are ultimately very destructive for those people. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so what I always advocate is, what's easier to change, the gender or the sex? You know, kind of moving on to their advocacy, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has addressed the issue of suicide in LGBT populations and reached the same conclusions on the actual causes of suicide in the transgender community. They declare, suicidal behaviors in LGBT populations appear to be related to minority stress, which stems from the cultural and social prejudice attached to minority sexual orientation and gender identity. This stress includes individual experiences of prejudice or discrimination, such as family rejection, harassment, bullying, violence, and victimization. increasingly recognized as aspect of minority stress is institutional discrimination, resulting from laws and public policies that create inequities or omit LGBT people from benefits and protections afforded to others. Individual and institutional discrimination have been found to be associated with social isolation, low self-esteem, negative sexual gender identity, and depression, anxiety, and other mental disorders. These negative outcomes, rather than minority sexual orientation or gender identity per se, appear to be the key risk factors for LGBT suicidal ideation and behavior. Right? Now that's a pretty strong statement, right? Why do, according to this research, why do they commit suicide? They were accepted, so instead of teaching them how to cope with minority stress, right, the majority has to accommodate to them. So that's why gender bathrooms is such a big cause. That's a public way of affirming them. You know, gay marriage was a public way of affirming them, and so that's really what they want. They don't want tolerance. They want complete affirmation and celebration, which requires the reorientation of society and culture. Okay, any questions about that?
So, would you like kind of say a similar, when a kid basically throws a huge tantrum, right? And so the parent's reaction is to, like, the only way to end this problem is to is it, I mean, obviously it's maybe not apples to apples, but like similar in a way? We have this problem where a lot of people are committing suicide. And so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
so
there was a like Netflix show, I never watched it, but I read about it, called 13 Reasons Why. Did any of you guys watch it?
I've heard about it, but I
heard about it. Yeah, and the plot is this girl commits suicide and she sends out tapes to 13 different people, basically explaining their role that they played in her suicide. And there's almost like this vindictive element to that, right? I'm sure it's portrayed in a very, you know, nice, you couldn't help it type of way, but yeah, threatening to kill yourself is a way of controlling other people. It's a way of controlling your parents if you buy into it, right? Yeah, and you can kind of say, see, I told you, you drove me to this. So yeah, I think there is a temper tantrum aspect too. And that's why I'm saying we don't get angry enough at suicide.
Well, too, and I think it takes a lot more love to tell people what they don't want to hear than it does, you know, when you don't care about someone, just let them. I think there's many people who would agree that the LGBTQ lifestyle is not the best, but they don't really care enough to oppose it and, you know, suffer the societal consequences in a sense. So when you ask about the tantrum, I think it's harder as a parent to lovingly discipline and care for your kid and teach him what's right, even when they don't like it. And, you know, in the long run, after time and time again, you know, that it reaps a fruit. But I think there is a lack of people that are willing to stand up and want to say what they believe is true and right to these people in a loving way, and knowing that that's probably not going to be it's going to have a lot of social cost to them. So I think it's difficult as a teacher to talk lovingly and say what I believe is true to these kids who are wanting or thinking about being transgender, and there's always going to be a risk that a parent or somebody, well, you said no matter what, how kind or gracious you are, if it's not 100% affirming.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing that, you know, we have to be ready for, is to always speak with love and truth and compassion, and know that there are going to be times with, it doesn't matter how kind and loving you are, by some, it's going to be interpreted as hateful. But that's, I mean, we're called to speak.
Yeah.
Speak the truth.
Yeah, so the issue is, are they mentally disturbed and they need therapy? Or is it society has driven them to it? Yeah, I think as long as the narrative is society has driven them towards it, it's going to demand societal change. And I think every time they hold up a suicide victim as a martyr, it's to reinforce that narrative. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll go ahead and stop there. Let me pray. No, remember, next week it's muffins and coffee for Easter. It's not the full on Easter brunch, but we'll take it. Well, Father, I do thank you for just this class and as we try to reason through this issue. Lord, we know that many who are transgender are deeply confused about identity, deeply confused about who they are, and also very miserable. And Lord, I know many will be drawn into the false gospel of transgenderism, that you can change your identity and that will make you whole and happy, and is to be found in being a different gender than what you're born with. And Lord, I pray that as we talk about this, that we'll be equipped to tell them that their true identity comes being found in you, being adopted into your family, being a son or daughter of the King. Just pray for this next element of our worship service. It'll be edifying and glorifying in Christ's name.